Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Hello everyone. You listen to the sound of universal compassion. Today's the 19th of January. We will continue listen to Master Tenjin Chosen's Peewee's program, Meditation, Dying, and Karma. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Welcome to today's program, and I hope your week has been very fruitful and happy. Every day I drop into the New Zealand Herald website to find out what's going on in the world. It's mostly torrid. I think journalists must be able to sniff tragedy and mayhem on the wind, because there's so much of it in our newspapers. But the real reason I bring up the newspaper is for what is behind each one of the stories we read about. As we ended last week's program, I talked about the cause of cyclic existence, this ongoing situation of suffering we're all in, and said it was delusion, or afflictive emotions, and karma. Karma, remember, is ripened by the afflictive emotions. If we didn't have these mental contaminants lurking in our mind streams, and an afflictive emotion did arise, we would not suffer from it. It would, however, create new negative karma that could ripen into an unpleasant experience in the future. Going back to the newspapers, if we look at all the harmful stories and try to find out what the actual cause of the trouble was in each one, we would, I think, always come back to a negative thought. Somebody somewhere developed a harmful intention because someone else didn't agree with them, and then instead of trying to regulate what their mind was doing, they took action against the perceived enemy or victim. And that led to all sorts of problems and the stuff we read in the newspapers. If we want to really put a stop to all the suffering, we have to look at transforming our minds so that we free ourselves from those negative thoughts and the afflictive emotions that bring them out. It may seem an awfully hard thing to take on, but if we don't at least try, we will always carry with us the potential to be involved in nasty situations like those in the daily rags. What then are the afflictive emotions? Basically, an afflictive emotion is anything that disturbs the peace of mind. You can see we are afflicted by many such emotions. Look carefully at your experience, and you may see that it's regulated by an endless parade of disturbances. However, although in practice the disturbances are innumerable, some 26 have been identified as the worst, and 6 of those are held up as the root delusions. We're going to start to look at those 6 in this program. As I mentioned last week, they are attachment, aversion, ignorance, pride, doubt, and wrong views. Wrong views is again divided into 5, but I'll explain when we come to them later. But now, before we go on to look at the 6 root afflictive emotions, let's set a very positive and beneficial motive for participating in this program today. As I've said many times before, it's the motivation that determines the ethical quality of an action. So the more positive and vast our motivation, the better our action, whatever the immediate outcome. The best motivation is to attain enlightenment, to be the best help to others. So let's try for that now. If you think that's too difficult, at least set a motivation to attain liberation for yourself. Thank you. Now back to the afflictive emotions, the first of which is desirous attachment. You're walking along and pass a car showroom, and there, center stage, is a beautiful, shiny, red Ferrari sports car. You're completely dazzled and may even go into the showroom for a closer look and to touch and stroke it. When you continue your stroll in due course, the car stays in your mind and you dream about whizzing along the road in it, attracting stares from everyone. It becomes your favorite topic of thought, and you buy books with pictures of the car and read up all about it. Often you go back to the showroom for another drool over it. If it was sold, you would be devastated. Okay, so now in fact you may not be a great car enthusiast and Ferraris don't do much for you, but we can actually substitute anything for the car, anything that makes the mind latch on and not want to let go. Maybe it's a song that you play over and over again. Maybe it's your girlfriend or boyfriend. Maybe it's food. In your own life, what is it that really appeals to you that you don't want to let go? That mental factor that latches on and doesn't want to let go is desirous attachment. You may ask, what is wrong with attachment? After all, something or somebody you're attached to can give you lots of pleasure. Well, the basic problem with attachment is that it exaggerates the attractiveness of the object to such an extent that the mind develops a kind of obsession with it. In reality, you don't see the thing or person as it really is. You see it as a kind of hallucination, and it's that hallucination that you fall in love with rather than the object itself. Let's take the Ferrari again. Actually, it's just a collection of bits of metal, rubber, plastic, and so on, come together in a certain shape. It's really nothing more. The red paint might make it stand out a bit more from other cars, but its special nature is made up only in one's mind, and perhaps through its reputation. The mind puts an idea of beauty onto this collection, but the beauty is not inherent. This is borne out by the fact that some people will really like the car and others won't. From the point of view of the car, who would be right? You see, from the car's point of view, it's neither beautiful nor ugly. It's just what it is. If it was inherently beautiful, then everyone would think it was the best car in the world. The very fact that some people don't indicates that the mind is playing games here. Exaggerating the attractiveness might be okay if it actually brought us long-term happiness, but it doesn't. It just brings more and more dissatisfaction. Let's say you win lotto, and now you have enough money to buy the Ferrari that you've salivated over for so long. You put down the money and drive the car out of the showroom. Perhaps on the way home, you stop at the dairy to get a carton of milk. When you come out, someone has scratched the car. What do you do? Probably, you'll get very upset and curse and swear like a trooper, threatening that if you ever find the person who did it, you'll break their knees. So that is the very first misery you've encountered. And whenever you take the car out, you're going to have the worry that someone will scratch it again, or even worse, crash into it. Worry over your baby is another suffering. Also, maybe now you have this car, you find it doesn't drive as smoothly as you thought it would, and it only goes from 0 to 60 in 4.8 seconds instead of the 4.2 seconds you hoped for. When we have high expectations of something we're attached to, very often it lets us down, leaving us feeling dissatisfied, and there's another suffering attachment brings. But perhaps the worst about something so beautiful is that it won't stay that way. Because impermanence plays such a huge role in our existence, nothing ever stays the same. Everything changes. So the car, or whatever it is, will get old and lose its appeal. That is guaranteed. In 5 years, another Ferrari or a Maserati or Porsche or whatever will shine for you above all others, and your present red wonder will just seem like old hat. In fact, it may even be that the next time you pass the car showroom, a new silver Lamborghini sits in the place where your car used to be, and that now seems so much nicer than the red Ferrari you've just bought. And then your longing, which is a form of suffering, starts all over again. You see, that's the nature of attachment. Like salt water, it doesn't satisfy our thirst. It just makes us more thirsty. It never leads us to the long-term satisfaction it promises. If you don't believe me, just think about all the things or people you have lusted after and obtained. Did any of them bring you ongoing, lasting happiness and satisfaction? In particular, Did any of them bring you the satisfaction you actually imagined they would? When attachment is involved, it's very seldom we get the happiness out of the object we thought we would. Another unpleasant thing about attachment is that it can occur with anything the senses come in contact with. So we can become attached to beautiful sights, musical sounds, delicious tastes, soothing touches, exotic perfumes. Anything the mind contacts through the senses for us can be like a worm with a hook on the end of a line is for a fish. And as difficult as it is for the fish to get away once snared, so problematic it will be for us to free ourselves of our attachment. How many times have you had a clean out of your garage or storeroom, but although you know you will never use some things again, you can't bear to part with them? So back they go into the storage shelf, never to be thought of again until the next spring clean, when you will do exactly the same thing. It is said that unlike all the other afflictive emotions, attachment is very hard to get rid of, like oil in a rag. You probably know that if you spill oil on a cloth, it soaks in very quickly, and then no matter how much you wash it, it's very difficult to get the oil stain out. Not like dirt that may get onto your clothes and which easily comes out once in the washing machine. It is like the mind actually absorbs into the object, and then it seems impossible to separate the two. Also, we're constantly in contact with our objects of attachment, so there never seems to be any let-up. We're not always in contact with the objects of the other afflictive emotions in the same way. For instance, how much of your day is spent in contact with people who make you angry? We tend to avoid such people, so may only come in contact with them occasionally, and our anger is not continually provoked. But look around you, and you will easily find lots of things your mind latches onto and you don't want to break away from. People, food, possessions, health, there's so many objects of attachment in our environment. Our body is perhaps the worst one because it's always with us wherever we go. We don't want it to suffer even for a second, so ply it with all sorts of pleasurable things, even though some, like cigarettes for instance, may be harmful for it. Mostly, we look after our body very well, avoiding at all costs the thought of death, which means the end for this body. But the body too must pass, and one day we will have to face up to the fact that we are dying and that this precious body is really just a lump of degenerating flesh and other bilious substances. And then our attachment will make not only death, but our coming life very unhappy. One of the meditations that monks are encouraged to engage in is on the 32 impurities the body contains. This is to lessen the attachment to the body, especially when we see one that appears very attractive to us, whether it's our own or another person's. The impurities include such things as urine and feces, but also hair, bodily organs, and so on. In general, meditating on the unpleasantness of your object is a way to decrease attachment. So if we think about the Ferrari, for instance, looking at it, we could think it is pleasant to look at, but actually, it's a very costly piece of construction both to buy and to run. Do we really want to spend all that money on it when a less expensive vehicle can get us around just as easily? The Ferrari also pollutes the atmosphere. It runs on and produces substances we know are harmful to the environment and to ourselves. It's also potentially very dirty. You know what a garage floor looks like when a car has leaked oil all over it. And if you ever have to fix a car or even change its wheel, you'll quickly realize what a dirty job it is. Couple all this with the worry you will have keeping the car in a pristine condition, for example, scratch-free and crash-free, as I mentioned before, and the other disadvantages like knowing it will not bring you lasting satisfaction, and you may start to think owning it is not such a good idea after all. Perhaps it's better in the showroom, where you can come by and look at it, but sigh with relief that you don't have to own it. Another way of freeing yourself from attachment is to imagine yourself dying with this attachment on your mind. You know you will have to leave the object of your attachment behind forever. You will never see it again. So you could be very unsettled at death time. Wouldn't it be better to give it away right now, so that at death time you can leave without any such worries? Your mind will be at peace and the chance of a happy rebirth much greater. Perhaps the best way to free ourselves from attachment is to try to see the object of attachment as it really is, rather than how it appears to our deluded mind. If we take the Ferrari apart and lay all its parts out in front of us, will we still feel so attracted to it? You see, the car doesn't exist as a whole integrated thing with its own kind of special Ferrari existence. It only exists as a collection of bits and pieces, the causes and conditions that brought them together, and the mind that labels it car or Ferrari. For one thing, if you came closer and saw it wasn't a Ferrari after all, but a car dreamt up by John Deere, a tractor-making company, would you still feel so much attraction for it? You see how much the label plays in our attachment. And if you took the car apart, trying to find the real Ferrari, would you find it? Is it the steering wheel, the bonnet, the chassis, the red color? Where's the real car that is not dependent on anything else? You see, we can even break the car down to its atoms and subatomic particles, and then not even the vestige of a Ferrari will remain. The car only came into being because some people with a reputation brought in some raw products and then put them together in various ways to create the parts for the car. Then they put those parts together, somebody called the results a Ferrari, and voila, you have what you see in the showroom. But it's still only a collection of causes, conditions, and parts, which a mind labels Ferrari. In no other way does the car exist. Thinking of it like this can help in freeing the mind of grasping at it as if it really had some special Ferrari-ness of its own. Now let's do a little meditation on attachment, its faults and antidotes. Please sit comfortably and concentrate on your breath, letting everything else come and go without being involved in any of it. Something or someone you have been attached to in the past and which you obtained. Remember the expectation you had about it and the subsequent experience when you obtained it. Did the two match? Did the object you so badly want bring you the satisfaction you thought it would? attachment to parts in your mind. Lay the parts out in front of you and see if you still desire it as much as you used to. Actually deconstruct it to its smallest particles, which are only little packets of energy whizzing around. Remember how it's just a construction of these particles into raw materials which come together as parts collected in a certain order. Then a mind labels that collection, and that's how the object or person comes into being. Looking at it like that, do you still lust after it so much? Aspects of the object or person, as we described, for instance, with the car. If thinking of food, remember how many beings suffered in its making and how it becomes something revolting in your body, and so on. If meditating on another person, think of the unpleasant aspects of their body being made up of substances that in ordinary circumstances we don't want to go near. Also remember that this person is sometimes angry, sometimes uncommunicative, and so on. They're not always pleasing. This may need you to deconstruct whatever the object is again, to realize that the outward aspects are just a show covering some unpleasant ingredients. On your mind, knowing you have to say goodbye to the object forever, never see it or touch it again. Would your death and rebirth be happy or not? That is all for today as we've run out of time. Please dedicate any positive energy from our program today to gaining enlightenment for the benefit of not only yourself, but all others as well. Thank you for joining us today, and I hope we can count on you to do so again next week. Till then, goodbye.